Oh. Oh, it's cold. Oh, it's so very cold. It's 5 below, and that's the high. Just coming in from the car into the diner, I lost feeling in every single extremity, and loath to touch my earlobes lest they crack off. It's like living on Neptune with a wind chill. Well, no, it's not really like living on Neptune. I mean, you can't stand on Neptune, can you? Or is it all gas? No, there's got to be an iron core down there somewhere. But it's mostly gas. You couldn't stand. If you landed on Neptune, it'd be pretty much a long fall, and that wouldn't be pleasant. You know, when I was a kid, reading comic books, these bad sci-fi comic books from DC or Charlton or the rest, they postulated biped races on every possible planet in the solar system. In 300 years from now, there'd be a united planetary system, and it would always be the same thing. You know, the Jovians and the Neptunians and the Uranians, and they all looked like long, attenuated-limbed humans with bird heads or fish heads and beaks for nose or gills on the side of their necks and the like. Venusians, they're always Venusians. Not many Mercurians, because I think the comic book makers, that it would strain the credibility amongst their audience if they had people living on Mercury. Too damn hot. But, you know, if you were scientifically inclined, if you were a kid who liked sci-fi and you read these comics, you also probably read real books about the planets, and you would know that it was impossible for advanced civilizations, such as the ones depicted in the books, to exist on these planets. A, they're too cold. B, there's no light. C, you can't really build an infrastructure and a city and skyscrapers and an industry when essentially everyone is falling heedlessly to their death as they are going towards the weak gravity of the iron core. So it's just ridiculous. It's just preposterous. It makes me angry to think about it. Hi, folks. Welcome to the diner, where it's very cold. Very cold. And I'm James Lilacs. Finally back at my accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern Formica counter here at the old diner on an old Highway 23, about 18 and a half parsecs. From wherever you happen to be right now. No, I'm sorry. I know. Parsecs is a measurement of distance, not a measurement of time. So it's 18 and a half light years from wherever you happen to be right now. Just kidding. 18 and a half minutes. You might want to add a couple, though, because if you hadn't gotten in your car, it's going to take a while to warm it up. I always make the mistake of turning my car off and going in the house and not thinking that I left the heater on full blast. Which means, of course, when I get back in the car, turn on the heater, this incredible frigid blast hits my face. An Arctic mare's ass, as the spoonerizing weathermen are hesitant to say. So you might want to give some extra time. You might want to plug in the car. That's something we don't do anymore. I'm not sure why. When I was a kid, you always plugged in the car. Got cold, you plugged in the car. Nobody plugs in their cars anymore. If you go to the Holiday Inn in Fargo, which I've done many times, there's a whole row of electrical outlets in the parking lot where people can plug in their cars. The assumption was when they built the place back in 74, 75, everyone would not only carry jumper cables, but they'd carry a spare extension cable so they could plug in the car. I wouldn't even know where to plug in my car now. That's one of those things we've lost, like playing football in the snow. We're not the hardy Viking race we once were. Weak, we are. Weak. How I hate us. Us with our lying comic books. Okay, well, I'm in a mood today, I guess. I apologize. It's been a while, I know, and I apologize for that wholeheartedly. Just been very, very busy. I haven't had the time to really sit back and relax and enjoy the ambiance of the diner. As a matter of fact, I hate to say it, I haven't been here since New Year's Eve. It was a grand time. We watched the ball drop on the small little black and white Crosley television bolted up in the corner of the diner. We had champagne, which was not so good because we opened up one of the bottles and it just took somebody's eye out, frankly. Champagne bottles are dangerous things. I mean, I don't know how to tell you when they come with that little wire cage on top of it. Where else do you see a wire cage? At the zoo, where dangerous animals are kept. In an insane asylum where homicidal maniacs are stowed behind wire cages. If you're in the Soviet Union and you've You're having a trial for a guy who's murdered 67 prostitutes. Where do you put him? You put him in a wire cage. So what do you get when you look at a champagne bottle? There's a wire cage. That tells you something. And what, of course, do most people do? Well, they immediately start to cinch it open. And then pop, off it goes. Wow, right in the head. It makes you wonder who exactly invented champagne. From what I understand, it wasn't a guy named Champagne. Champagne is a place. It was inadvertent, I think, that it was one of those things like vulcanization and penicillin, where somebody just made a mistake or left something going overnight, and they came back and voila, champagne, or voila, vulcanized champagne that cures syphilis. That would be a French invention. But somebody must have done something with the bottle and set it aside, and then one day, you know, either the bottle exploded or the cork shot off. And I'm just stunned that nobody actually used champagne for military purposes. That nobody instantly thought of the military applications of champagne, of carbonation. Carbonation is a tremendous power. You would think that once they had discovered that these corks would fly off with great force and strike people in the head or the yarbles or wherever, that somebody would have said, we can turn this to our advantage and construct a gigantic, you know, Jeroboam's, Nebuchadnezzar's, there are actual terms, incidentally, for bottle sizes, full of powerful, powerful, state-of-the-art champagne. And they would roll those things up on creaking wooden carts and then give the command and, you know, unloose the corks and bowl over 50 men with a good-sized cork. Wouldn't have the explosive power of a cannonball once it got there, but, you know, it's cork, so it's going to be cheaper. Or is it? Well, I don't know about that. Cork trees could be That'd be very interesting. Somebody could, if there had, you know what? I'm sure they did. I'm sure that there was a champagne core that actually probably used, I don't know, smaller shoulder-mounted versions of champagne rockets and took out their enemy, won battles, covered themselves with glory as well as a certain sweet, sticky foam that was not entirely attractive smelling the next day, and that the other side realized that if they torched the cork forests or introduced some sort of miscreant weevil that would bring the cork forest to its knees, they could eliminate this this fearsome weapon that the French had come up with. And that's why the French, frankly, excuse me, probably have never militarily dominated Europe as before. Their one experiment with the ultimate weapon, really, the ultimate French weapon, which would be the champagne gun, ended poorly for them. Probably, now that I think about it, because after the corks have gone off, what happens? Well, you've got the foam, and then you've got the bottle, and you've got to drink it because it's going to go flat, and there's nothing worse than flat champagne. So when Don, excuse me again, so when Don Ho sings about tiny bubbles, you know, it's 500 years from now, somebody will be singing a charming little ditty about, you know, Fat Man and Little Boy and the atomic weapons. And the whole fearsome history of that weapon will have been turned into a popular song about an intoxicating beverage. Yep, that all makes sense. Glad I went off on that track. That makes perfect sense. Yep, champagne rockets. Well, since I haven't been here in a while, I can't really see that anything's different. I see that all the Christmas decorations are down, of course. Came down on January 2nd. Very odd. This is the first year I almost miss Christmas in January. Usually you're just so damned sick and tired of it, but I could use a little Christmas right about now, and I don't know why. It may be just the brutality of winter this year. Oh, well. Let's see what's on the chalkboard menu by the door. Ooh. Sterno pudding. I love sterno pudding. I'll have some sterno pudding. Thank you. Yes, please. Oh, it's delish. No, it's not warmed with the sterno. It is sterno. It's got sterno in it. Some people don't like the, you know, petroleum-y naphtha aftertaste, but to me that's part of the charm. Warms you up, it does. Sticks to the ribs. Literally. I mean, you got to be careful. You get that stuff on your ribs out side of your body, you better get a spatula and take it off, because otherwise it eats right through. Eats right through. Could be nasty. So, asbestos gloves and a steel spoon, but it'll warm you up. Let's see what's on the jukebox today, shall we? Don't know. Gosh, I hate to think of that. The fellow who stocks the jukebox has been coming by and changing out songs for the last 2 weeks, and I haven't heard any of them. Well, no, I'm sure he's up to date. All right, let's try it. Let's just go here at random. I'm going to put a hand over my eyes and just punch buttons and see what song comes up.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Well, same to you guys.
May this year be good to you with health, good luck, prosperity too.
What if I'm Hitler?
Happy New Year.
What if you're wishing Happy New Year to Hitler?
Happy New Year.
Think about these things. Hello, come back. Where'd it go? What the hell is this?
Out with the old year, in with the new, and a happy new year.
The Harlem Bongo Band?
Happy New Year, everybody.
The Mills Brothers go beatnik.
Get happy, now while your hearts are lighter, let everyone sing out.
Howdy-ho, man.
Happy New Year, everybody. We're really happy. The new year will be brighter. There isn't any doubt. There goes the old year with all our troubles. See him limping away. Here comes the new year, fresh as a bubble. Now everything's okay.
What a delusion. Hey.
Happy New Year, everybody.
What a preposterous delusion. There goes the old year, taking away with it our troubles, our debt, our physical infirmities, our neuroses, our painful childhoods. It's all gone now because of an arbitrary calendrical decision.
Come on, get happy. Let's fill each glass with sunshine, and then we'll drink it down. Happy New Year, everybody.
I can tell.
The new year's looking so fine. We're acting like a clown.
God almighty. You know, at least this is probably better than Auld Lang Syne. If there's ever a song that was the wrong thing to play at the peak of a party, it's Auld Lang Syne. For one thing, nobody knows what it means. I mean, should old acquaintances be forgotten, never brought to mind, da-da-da-da-da, and sing the Auld Lang Syne, which means old long sign, I think, is what it is. Which is a kind of a wave, you know. I don't know what it means, but it's da 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 da. It's like a funeral march for clowns, and everybody's drunk and everybody's kissing and everybody's having a great time, and that's the song they play. Never figured that one out. Well, obviously the jukebox guy hasn't come around. Wonder if he watches to see if I'm here or not. Maybe he stalks me. Maybe he stays outside my house and waits for me to come out and go to the diner. Notices when I'm not here. Maybe he's stalking me. I wonder if stalkers have stalkers. It's entirely possible. I mean, a stalker would be drawn to the profession, so to speak. Want to learn from the best, catch up some tricks, or just share in the excitement. It'd be a shock to a stalker if they had a stalker, wouldn't it? That might turn their head right around, convince them to find something better to do with their life. Oh, what am I talking about? Let's try something else here. Let's go to M1. God, no! Okay, what craptacular disco version of a well-known song is this one gonna be? Brace yourself. Disco Lucy. Yes, here we are at the Studio 54 version of the Lucille Ball Show. It's Fred Mertz in a white suit, coke to the gills. It's Ethel selling Quaaludes. It's Ricky with a shirt down to the navel. He's gay. Who knew? Ugh. You know, you could take this section of the song right here and plug it into any disco song ever written. It would fit. At some point in this filler, the female vocalist will come on and either inform us that this is disco X, fill in the blank for X, or we will be commanded to dance or something like that. What's it going to be this time, gals? Ah, okay, let's dance. There you go. Everybody, let's dance. That turns out to be the reason why we're all here on the floor. And Kiana, swirling around, looking like greased up idiots. No. I'm not going back there. I'm not going to the 70s, man. I'm not going back there. You can't make me. Honest to God, I swear I've been living with a 60s and a 70s revival my entire life. I felt like I was living in a 60s revival in the 70s. Because everybody who was my elder, who was 30, was always lauding that decade as the greatest possible interval in human civilization. The music was good, the sex was good, the drugs were good, the politics were groovy, man. Everything was great. We drove out Johnson, we did rid of Nixon. Ugh. God, I was tired of hearing it by the time my own decade came around. And when my own decade came around, what was it? It was the 70s. God help me. It was corduroy. It was brown. It was thick. It was shag. It was orange. It was foil wallpaper. It was disco. It was chicken-chested little sensitive songwriters pouring out their hearts to women who probably would leave them for a trucker or somebody with a pair. It was all of that stuff. And then there were little signs of light. There were hopeful things like the rise of progressive music as exemplified by Al Stewart. Al Stewart was the future. Al Stewart gave us hope because he came out with a 7-minute song they played on the radio and it had saxophone in it and poetical lyrics. She's like a watercolor running in the rain. Well, you know, don't leave your paintings out then. You, Al Stewart, keep your watercolors out of the rain. You, Richard Harris, don't put your cake out in the rain in MacArthur Park. There, we got the 60s and the 70s covered. Avoid rain. It's a deleterious effect on the lyrical enjoyment of your songs. Al Stewart wasn't that bad. The 70s did end nicely. There were hopes. There was Zippy the Pinhead. There was Saturday Night Live. But mostly there was disco. But disco was supplanted. Disco was pushed away by punk and new wave. And then, yay, things were great. Unfortunately, we had a recession, and we had Ronald Reagan as the president. This is the worst thing that could have possibly befall you when you're 20, 22 years old. Ronald Reagan, man, he's like 104 years old, and he doesn't care if he lives anymore. He wants to destroy the world. That's why he got elected, because he wants to blow everybody up. He wants to start World War III. He's itching for it, man. He's just itching for it. Can't you see? So we were convinced that Ronald Reagan was going to kill everybody because, of course, that was the modus operandi of the whole guy's life. His modus vivendi was to start the nuclear holocaust, apparent in every single thing he did. Why, who did he work for? GE. What does GE make? They make nuclear bombs. End of story. So what did we have then in the 80s? Well, we had new wave. Punk was dead. Disco was dead. We didn't have the cool stuff of the 80s yet that would come along in the Miami Vice era, and we had Ronald Reagan and a recession. And the recession, coupled with Reagan, would convince the average 20, 22-year-old that we were on the cusp of disaster and that it was going to be the Depression. The Depression. The Big D Depression, with brokers hurling themselves out of windows. Of course, it would be a problem in Fargo because, you know, they're on the second floor and they, you know, bounce off a car hood or something. But, you know, I was in Minneapolis by then, and the idea of seeing a rain of brokers hurling themselves out of plate glass windows was mortifying. And, you know, they'd fall on who? They would fall on the guys selling apples, okay? No, that wouldn't work, come to think of it, because first you have the panic where people throw themselves out, and then you have the economic crash, which results in the broker selling apples. Unless, of course, we were living in a time that was so sped up, so modern, man, so hectic and hurly, purly, merly, whirly, that, you know, the act of being thrown out of work and becoming an apple vendor was simultaneous with the crash of the market that drove people out the windows in droves. So, yeah, it was entirely possible. It was a new world, man. It wouldn't last long because the Depression would culminate in what? War. War, of course. That's what always happens. Happened in the 30s. You know, Depression led directly to war, and it was going to happen in the 80s. We were sure of it. But it was going to be different this time. Somehow the Soviets would do something stupid, like invade Western Europe. Like, guys, did you have to do that? Of all the things, did you have to? China, maybe. Nobody cares about it. Go invade China. Invade North Korea. Invade somebody up in Europe. Don't you know that's going to make Reagan crazy, man? So that's what we thought was going to happen. We even had a TV movie to prove it the day after. That's what it was like. That's what it was like growing up in the days before the economy turned around. And I have that awful feeling that people think we're on the cusp of that again. We're not. We're not. I'm looking around the diner right now, and I'm here to tell you that if this place... Well, I don't know what the diner looked like in 1977, but I can guess. Depends on the ownership, I suppose, but... A place like this in 1977 would have been threadbare and tumbled down and frayed. The linoleum would have been scuffed and worn away. The seats would have been frayed. The people would have been frayed. The waitresses would have been frayed. Everything would have just had a sort of sad end-of-the-road decline and fall of American civilization, lean back, toke up, and enjoy the ride feel to it. Not today. We got over that, and it's preposterous to think that people think we're going to go there again. Not as long as there are people like me, people who lived under the rule of the boomers for most of their lives and then struggled out to find their own place in the sun with our stubbled chins and our pastel clothes and our shoes without sneakers and our alligators as pets in our houseboats. Okay, well, not all of us. But those of us who remember the 80s are determined not to go back to the 70s. So when we talk about gas lines and stagflation and the end of the economy and the cratering of everything and the decline of American influence, no, been there. This isn't that. And I don't want to have it happen again, so I will do everything in my power, which will probably consist entirely of ranting long and loud here at the diner. And I noticed that people seem to have moved away. Sorry. A little too much coffee. Let's hit the jukebox, shall we? Let's see what we have here at C1. It's Betty Boop in Bosco Does Dallas. It's odd. This guy over there crying. Over the booth. Hold on a second. I'm going to go see if he's okay.
This is Rudy Valley again.
Yeah?
Stepping perhaps a bit out of character in singing a song from Americana. A song that has taken its audiences by storm, which may be explained by its theme, which is both poignant and different. Brother, can you spare a dime?
Well, get to it!
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done.
But now
brother,
there is a new paradigm. I'm sorry here. I was talking to that guy who was crying. He'd opened up his bank statement, his mutual fund investment statement. Guy made some bad investments. What can I say? Put everything in these hedge funds that did nothing but repackage subprime loans. And it's wiped out. Well, that's going to happen. But, you know, it's not the end of the economy. Oh, God. For God's sakes. He's trying to jump out the window. Here, we're on the ground. Hold on. I'm going to have to forcibly restrain him. I'll be back. Take it away, Rudy Valley. Now, stop that. The windows don't need... It's cold out there.
Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Okay, this guy is just preposterously despondent, so I'm going to try to talk him out of his funk here. This would be a good time to break for a word from our sponsor. It's Amalgamated Apples, coming soon to a corner near you. No, I'm sure it's somebody else. Be right back.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. I figured that you're the Muriel cigar smoking kind, so let me get right to the point. You're right in style when you're in Muriel's company. Hey, big spender, spend a little dime with me. Hey, big spender, spend a little dime with me. Join the Muriel Miles crowd. Pick one up and smoke it sometime.
So to speak. He seems a little better now. I told him that, you know, he may be broke, but life goes on. As in the immortal words of Celine Dion, your heart will go on. Even if you do manage to, kill yourself tonight, chances are they'll find a recipient for your heart. Unless you really jump off something high, because then you're just ruining it for everyone. I mean, then you're goo. You know, they can't transplant goo, so, you know, think of other people. Anyway, that's what I told him. It seemed to buck him up a little. All right, well, let's play maybe one more. Oh my God. He's gone over to the cash register. He's got a knife. He's holding it at the cashier. It's a table knife, too. It's not going to do anything. He's demanding money. This is just like the 70s all over again. People driven to desperation by economic circumstances. No, we're not going to go there. Oh, I've got to stop this. Well, I forgot. I happen to be one of those lucky people in Minnesota who has a concealed champagne carry permit. Hold on. Get it out. Undo the wire cage. Yes! Knocked the knife right out of his hands. No, I wouldn't have shot him in the head, for heaven's sakes. I've seen enough westerns to know that when you want to subdue a bad guy, you shoot the weapon out of his hand. Yes, that was a good shot. And could somebody please subdue him? I can't do everything here, for heaven's sakes. Well, that's going to do it for today, folks. Thanks for dropping by. I'm James Lilacs, and this has been The Diner for Friday, January 18th, 2008. I'll see you down the road. And remember, only you can prevent the 70s.